In 2015, with opioid-related deaths spiking, Mayor Bill de Blasio and his wife, Shirlane McRae, announced that New York City residents would be able to get the overdose-reversing drug naloxone at a participating pharmacies across the city without a prescription. Over the course of the next year, opioid deaths continued to plague the city, increasing nearly 47%. A front-page story in last week's New York Times, written by Metro reporter Annie Coriel, reveals that most pharmacies in the city either do not carry naloxone or require a prescription to dispense the drug, or think they need to. Here to discuss the city's program and to address opioid-related deaths is New York Times reporter Annie Coriel. Hello, Annie.
Hi.
I read your story, and I sort of had a dropped jaw as I was reading it, because so many cities across the country have realized we have to make naloxone, Narcan, which a lot of people know it as, available, and that in our big, beautiful city, that it's becoming a problem. That was striking to me. How did you first hear about this issue?
So we got a tip. Actually, it came to a science reporter, and she said, you know, this is a New York City story. So she passed it on to me, and it was just like, well, let's just check this out and see if there's anything to it. So I called the woman who had trouble finding naloxone, mm-hmm. and it did seem a little troubling, raised some questions. And so I went onto the city's website. We downloaded the list of 720 pharmacies.
Okay, 720.
And we started making calls. And I had the same experience you did, which was sort of like you can't really believe your ears or sort of... It was like, oh, let's just keep calling.
We're going to hit. This was
maybe
a mistake.
This is just
one or
couple
two, right?
of them. But we started just hearing the same things over and over again. We don't carry it. We can order it, but we don't have it right now. How do you spell that? You need a prescription. I can only give that to you if it's an emergency. Call the police. We don't do that. We don't want to do that. It doesn't make economic sense for us. There were a number of reasons that pharmacy workers gave when they gave them, but the overall picture that emerged was one of a number of obstacles that someone would have to face if they went to a pharmacy.
Now, had this plan worked out as planned in the perfect world, what was supposed to happen?
Well, it does look pretty good on paper. You know, you go to the city's website. It's all very transparent. I have to say that mm-hmm. it was very easy for us to look at how dispensing was supposed to happen or is supposed to happen. So a pharmacy is to, because there is a standing order, meaning that instead of having a physician's name, you can put the health commissioner's name as the prescribing physician. So that removes the need for a prescription. So that means that participating pharmacies can watch a webinar online mm-hmm. To learn how to use naloxone. And when someone comes in, they are to give them the medication, the drug, mm-hmm. train them how to use it, even minors, and bill it to their insurance. And that's it. There's even, since the program was announced, the state created a program to cover copay up to $40.
Wow.
So there's a real good faith effort.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's putting a lot on the pharmacy workers. In some ways, they're being asked to train people to use this drug. They're being asked to download materials and post them. And so there's a bit of a process that, mm-hmm. that people would have to go through. And what was obvious is that no one was really overseeing that step.
That was my next question. Who was supposed to be supervising this, or how was this supposed to be supervised?
So when pharmacies joined the program, they were to be aware of the dispensing protocol, and then it was on them to go mm-hmm. through these steps and make sure that they were following the guidelines. I think one thing that happened was that when this began, it was far fewer pharmacies. Not long after the program was announced in 2015 as part of the city's comprehensive plan to battle opioid-related deaths, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, they all announced their own standing order, meaning that their own plans to sell naloxone without a prescription. So that meant that there weren't just a few hundred, but there were hundreds of pharmacies. So it becomes a much bigger task to monitor and keep track of all the pharmacies and whether they are following the guidelines. In fact, Kmart today, I got an email when I woke up this morning that yet another major chain has announced that it will dispense naloxone without a prescription in all states where that's allowed.
I have to say your story reached the health commissioner who wrote a fairly lengthy piece on Medium. People can check that out, and saying that she was really disturbed by what she read.
Right.
It's kind of amazing that they weren't aware.
Right. So I think that this is part of a much longer conversation, but when you have to involve for-profit entities, when you're working with businesses and you're the city's health department, how does that work? You know, they are meeting market demand in a neighborhood where someone might come in every 2 years to ask for this drug. It doesn't make sense from a market perspective to ask them to sort of be on top of it or always have it on the shelf. So how do you address those questions when the city is working with businesses to do something that is really a public health initiative?
If you have questions on this subject, you want to ask Annie, or you want to get to be part of the conversation, perhaps you've actually had to use Narcan, naloxone. The number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-9692. We'd love to hear from you. I want to back up a little bit for folks who's like, you know, I've heard of Narcan and naloxone. I'm not really sure what it is. Can you explain why it is used for folks who have had opioid overdoses?
Sure. Well, I should say that, you know, we really are looking at a huge public health crisis. Mm-hmm. You may not have seen an overdose. You may not know people who have this issue, but in the city, there are approximately 60 to 80,000 heroin and opioid users. In recent years, the drugs have become much more potent. The illicit synthetic fentanyl is believed to be behind a lot of the overdose deaths.
It's so potent that sometimes first responders who just get it on their fingers have had issues, right?
It depends who you ask.
Yeah. That, oh, really? Okay.
That is, people don't want to spread that myth because it could make people unnecessarily afraid to step in when there's an overdose.
That was a big thing in Philly. That's where I read it. But
right. Philadelphia is one of the cities where this is impossible to ignore as a crisis. But that's the case everywhere, including in New York. So the first step for public health officials, they've seen naloxone distribution as the first step in a much larger plan to try to really address this issue. So that means distributing naloxone. At this point, every police officer in New York City carries naloxone. You can find it at hospitals, at harm reduction organizations, at clinics. The city has focused on the distribution of free naloxone and making sure that people can get trained to use it and use it if they have a loved one who is likely to overdose or is using opioids.
I know that it's not just loved ones. I know that there was an issue in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Library where people were coming into the library and overdosing. So they actually...
Well, I actually wrote a story earlier this year about how that isn't just in Philadelphia.
Right.
Actually, public libraries, because they have public bathrooms, are a very frequent site of overdoses. It's something that librarians in New York State and around the country are actually considering carrying naloxone sort of systematically behind the reference desk because it's become that much of an issue.
So for people, like, how does it work? Just to let our audience know how it works.
So overdoses have become much more common. Once someone overdoses, there are certain symptoms that can indicate that that's what's happening: shortness of breath, discoloration, sort of a gasping, unresponsiveness. They won't wake up. And naloxone is available now as a nasal spray, which is the most common form if you get a kit, and a muscular injection. So it interrupts that overdose and really is kind of a miracle drug, and it brings people back.
Almost immediately?
Almost immediately.
Wow.
Sometimes it takes more than one dose. Mm-hmm. And of course, it can be very scary to have to do that if you aren't a trained emergency responder, and probably even if you are. But it's a very simple drug to administer, which is part of the reason that the Surgeon General came out last week and encouraged more Americans to carry naloxone and to learn to use it.
Is there any controversy around the training of it or who should be able to carry it, even though the Surgeon General said, I mean, I know, is it Maine where the governor is not sure that people of a certain age should have it?
Right. I mean, I think when you have anything like this, you're going to have some resistance. Mm-hmm. There are what are known as Good Samaritan laws that protect people from liability if they step in to do this.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that's one concern. One place we don't have naloxone in New York is the city's schools. So I think when you are asking any group of people to do this kind of thing that's way beyond their job description, you're going to have a little bit of a debate. But what harm reduction activists will tell you is this isn't different than first aid, CPR. And we don't really have a conversation about that. There isn't as much of a debate. So what a lot of people will point to is that the resistance to carrying and using naloxone is an expression of the stigma that still surrounds a drug overdose.
You mentioned it just briefly. Training. How would someone get training? You mentioned the injection. I think as soon as I heard that, I think anyone would think, I don't want to do that. But a nasal spray I could handle.
Right. So that's why the nasal spray has become the more common form that's used. The city has regular trainings. And at that training, you would be trained to spot the symptoms, to administer the drug, to turn a victim or a patient on their side so that they don't asphyxiate if they vomit, to do rescue breathing. And all of this is, of course, while you're waiting for 911 for the ambulance to show up. And then you walk away with a naloxone kit. So it isn't, you know, let's pull out the big needle and stab someone in the leg necessarily.
It sounds frightening to many people, I think, when you hear that initially. We're speaking with Annie Coryell. She wrote a piece in the New York Times last week about how the plan to provide naloxone to whoever needs it went awry. Let's go back to that plan a little bit. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 212-433-9692 if you've had an experience with naloxone, Narcan, or if you have questions for Annie about this, about our segment. Initially, who developed the plan and how is it supposed to be funded?
Right. Well, when the pharmacy plan came out, it was part of the city's comprehensive plan to battle opioid addiction and overdose-related death. Mm-hmm. So it was more of a cornerstone in that. As the numbers increased and the city shifted toward free naloxone distribution, the mayor announced a program called Healing NYC that it was $38 million were going to be sort of directed.
$38 million directed towards
opioid overdose death prevention.
Okay.
And sort of the surrounding issues.
Mm-hmm.
About $15 million of that went toward police, toward the heroin response detectives.
Mm-hmm.
Who, when someone does overdose, they look for clues about where the heroin came from, where the drugs came from. They look for names on the little envelopes of the drugs. They look at the last cell phone, the last numbers on the person's cell phone and enter that into a database to try to really break down the networks of people providing drug dealers, basically. So there was there has been an emphasis on the police aspect of fighting opioids in the city. Some advocates, some harm reduction activists have said there should be more going toward treatment and helping users rather than police. So there is that. But there has been quite a bit. Like the Healing NYC initiative started out at $38 million, which is not a small figure. And the mayor announced this year that it would go up by $22 million to $60 million. So the city is focusing on this. It's a really big priority. And it isn't just police. It's this distribution of free naloxone. It is now they're focusing also on the pharmacies, on sending health workers to, in response to our report, sending health department workers to all of the pharmacies and increasing the number of pharmacies to include independent stores, independent pharmacies in areas that have had a high overdose death rate.
We're speaking with Annie Coryell, reporter for the New York Times, about her investigation. Overdose antidote is supposed to be easy to get. It's not. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break. This is Midday on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and I'm chatting with Annie Coryell from the New York Times. We're talking about New York City's efforts to combat the opioid crisis. We've got a bunch of people on the line we want to get to. Let's talk to John in Brooklyn. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you doing? Hello to everybody. My question is basically, is the drug that stops overdose, can someone overdose on that drug?
Can you overdose on Narcan? The question.
No, that's a myth.
Okay.
And it only works on opioids, so it's not gonna help you if it's another drug that's caused the overdose.
Right. John, thanks so much for your. Oh, do you have one more?
Yeah, I have one other question. Could this drug be made would somebody have some knowledge on it? Could I make it?
Could someone make Narcan?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty complicated to manufacture it.
Okay, thanks so much, John. Let's go to Nathan in Queens. Nathan, you're an EMT?
Yes, I'm an EMT, and I'm also currently in a paramedic program.
Oh, great. Let's hear from you.
It's not so bad. It's in LaGuardia Community College, so I'm already in Queens.
Okay, did you have a question?
Yes. Is that what you were asking? I was going to ask if she did any research on private transport companies and how a lot of them don't actually carry Narcan on the transport side. They only have to carry Narcan on the 911 contract. So there's lots of ambulances on the road right now that don't have Narcan, and if she was aware of that.
I was not aware of that, and that is a great tip. I would love to follow up on it. You can email me by looking up my name and sending me an email to my New York Times account.
Wow, you got a good tip. Good to know. Thank you so much for sharing that, Nathan. Going to Rain. Hi, Rain.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. Do you have a question?
I do. I have a statement and a question, and I was so pleased to see Annie's article, and thank you, Allison, for covering this. So I spent part of my previous work at the Clinton Foundation and with other organizations trying to create a predictable and affordable supply of naloxone. And one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that there aren't many manufacturers who are making it. So this idea that it's supposed to be easy to get, I think it's important to note that New York City took a real leadership role in setting up the program that they did, but it doesn't guarantee, I think, to your earlier point, Annie, that you're going to be able to access it in pharmacies that work with the private sector, getting these independent pharmacies and companies to stock. It's a whole other issue. One of the things I wondered is when you were calling these different pharmacies, one of the big issues I've seen is still stigma around the misunderstanding of how opioid reversal agents can be used, their importance, their value. Did you get a sense in talking to these pharmacies that there was some hesitance? Like, could you pick up on the stigma issue in the conversations you were having with them?
Thank you, first of all, for making that point. New York State and New York City are leaders in this area. I also should give credit where credit is due. I had a news assistant working with me, Derek Norman, who made hundreds of calls and also helped going out to the zip codes with high overdose death rates. And, you know, yes, you can subtly pick up on the stigma. You know, there's always a question of you see what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there aren't signs for naloxone in the pharmacies, or in very, very few places are there, you know, any signs or brochures or letting people know. There are 6-foot tall signs for the flu shot, but nothing for naloxone. So I think that, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to increase the visibility and as part of an effort to educate the public, which of course is the best way to address stigma.
What about the supply of naloxone nationally?
Well, the
and the cost too.
I should say that the state is supplying the naloxone mm-hmm. kits in this case. You know, that again is a much bigger conversation. Mm-hmm. The price of naloxone has gone up. It's almost tripled since this program was announced in 2015. Wow. So I think that's another question. If I were to do another mm-hmm. article on this topic, it would be, you know, if you go to a pharmacy and it's $150, $170, that is, you may decide, you know, to just have this in my back pocket, that it's not worth
the expense.
Yeah,
it's cost prohibitive, yeah.
But that brings me to another point, is that one of the major points of confusion was whose insurance the drug got billed to. So even pharmacies that knew that it could be dispensed without a prescription insisted that it could only be billed to the insurance of the patient, so the would-be recipient. So if you're a parent, maybe your kid is on your insurance, mm-hmm. but in most cases, maybe...
How would you know also?
Maybe you don't even know who's going to end up using it, and that person isn't likely to come with you mm-hmm. and go through the whole process. And when people learn, if they learn, that they can put it on their own insurance, many are worried that it's going to affect their health insurance coverage or their ability to get a new health insurance mm-hmm. plan. So that was a very murky sort of, once it got to that question, it was just, that's often where things broke down. People would say, oh, I can't bill your insurance. But according to the city's guidelines, you are supposed to bill the insurance of whomever walks in to buy the drug, no questions asked.
Let's go to Andy in Westchester. Hi, Andy.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. Do you have a question?
So, I didn't really have a question, but I wanted to say something. I wasn't sure if all the listeners were really aware, but the drug that they use for getting a lot of the addicts off of opiates is Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically a pill or a film that they give you. But a lot of people don't realize that inside of the Suboxone, there's two medications. One is buprenorphine, which is an opioid. I believe it's an opioid antagonist, and the other one is naloxone. So when they're giving you this Suboxone to get you off of the street drugs or the pain medication pills, when you take the Suboxone, it actually blocks out any other opioids in your body or that you take within the next 36 hours.
Thanks. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, I know that that Suboxone, which is known as it's a brand name for buprenorphine, mm-hmm. has really been one of the replacement drugs that is being used more and more often. Methadone used to be the main one, and now we're seeing much more of that drug. So I'm sure that people are going to be learning more about it.
Yeah, there's some. I was sharing with you, I did a story about women who were pregnant who were addicted to opioids, and they used Suboxone with them quite often and after the pregnancy. As we talk about this big picture issue, we only have a few more minutes. Are there other harm prevention measures that the de Blasio administration is putting forward?
Yes. There is a sort of a peer-to-peer program where recovering users are sort of working in teams to respond to overdoses and or work with users. That is, it's called Relay, mm-hmm. and that's been successful so far. There are also many ways in which the de Blasio administration is looking at expanding treatment, mm-hmm. Sort of making sure that naloxone and the replacement drugs, Suboxone and Methadone, are more readily available around the city.
Before I let you go, I probably should ask this at the top of the show. When you were making these calls to all of these pharmacies, were there any areas that were particularly affected by the lack of naloxone?
It was it was definitely across the city. I will say the place where it was easiest to find naloxone was Manhattan. So Duane Reade's in Manhattan tended to be the ones who were most aware of the city's guidelines.
Well, I want to thank you for your reporting. It's such an excellent piece, and it's great to know that people are paying attention and that something might get fixed as a result of it.
Thank you so much, and I'm sure that we will all look at those posters on the subway that say I saved a life a little bit differently.
I've been speaking with Annie Coryell, reporter at the New York Times, about her investigation. Overdose antidote is supposed to be easy to get. It's not. Thanks, Annie.